Welcome to the Coaching and Therapy channel. So this channel is quite close to my heart because I train coaches in embodiment. I mean, why? Because if you don't work with the body, you're missing a lot. Whether you're a coach, a therapist, facilitator, whatever, that's how you go deep quickly. That's how you do stuff that's sticky. We have to take the body into account. This channel is sponsored by Dylan Newcombe and Uzazu Embodied Intelligence. Dylan is a genius, quite simply put, and I wouldn't say that about many people in this field. I've been studying with Dylan for, God, the first time was probably 10 years ago in the Netherlands. Speaks fluent Dutch, by the way, as well as Korean and a few other languages. What I love about Dylan is his ability to make models of things, looking at how embodiment works. His system, Uzazu, U-Z-A-Z-U, is really all about state shifting. So I think of him as the sort of master of state changing, how we can shift our state, our client's state, and how we can develop ourselves through those different ways of being. So I think for coaches and therapists, it's like easy to learn, practical toolkit. I've used it myself over the years. So if you want a 3-day online training with Dylan, then look at the link below, or you can go to Uzazu, uzazu.org. And even easier, he's got an embodied assessment there you can do as well. We all love doing these little tests about ourselves, but this is an embodied one. So there you go. Welcome to the Coaching and Therapy channel. I'm going to be on this one a lot just because there's lots of cool people on here. Lots of people, I think, you know, well worth a listen. Embodiment in facilitation is so necessary. So from me to you, welcome.
So Dr. Katie Larson is a growth and transformation specialist who works with highly sensitive people, empaths and intuitives. She has worked worldwide as a scientist, educator and consultant for schools, NGOs and private institutions. She's well known for creating quests, which are inner journeys to explore deeper meaning, purpose and perspectives. She's the author of children's books and a TEDx speaker and oh, so much more. Amazing how long her list of accomplishments is. So it is my absolute honor to welcome Dr. Katie Larson to the conference, and I hope you have a wonderful session.
Wonderful. Thank you. And can you hear me okay? Oh, now I'm going to begin. All right. Well, thank you so much for everyone. If you're joining me live during what might be a lunchtime or a tea time, and if you are in the recording, if you are eating a meal, we have about 20 minutes of non-movement. So if you want to hurry up and while I continue to describe who I am and a little bit about why I've been so disembodied up until about 5 years ago, this would be the time to do it. So I'm going to share my screen. Here we are. And I want to first thank everybody for taking the time to join me today. And know that I don't think I would have been here 5 years ago. And this is an image of me about 5 years ago. I was just finishing up my PhD. And I think I was really just a walking mind. I think many of us recognize this sensation at various points in our lives when we're really just a nice, comfortable space for our brain to be walking around in. We've been disembodied because we're so focused in our minds. Sure, there's many other reasons to be disembodied, but for me, about 5 years ago, I really just came to a point where all of a sudden I just didn't know who I was anymore. I was so focused on living this magical world of creating and writing and every day analyzing and coming up with new ideas for a dissertation. But it was a sensation of feeling lonely in my own body that really woke me up to my own embodiment journey. And I started to remember that I was born embodied, just like all of us. And I loved playing and dancing and swimming and climbing trees and really just being free in the world as a child. And I know all of us have these memories of just dancing and not thinking anything of it. But when I began my own embodiment work, as you know, one of the most important things to do is to go back to when we started to first become embodied. And for me, there was an origin at 12 years old when my body began to betray me. And it was when I was put on this, and I want to share the story because in some ways it's comical, and you might even be able to see yourself in the story. This might have happened to you as well, especially if you are a highly sensitive person. But it also represents a trauma that was one of the beginning moments of my life of becoming disembodied. So I want you to bring yourself back with me to when I was 12 years old and living in the United States, and we were learning how to play soccer or football. And my teacher was one of these tough guy PE teachers, and he really wanted to make sure everybody knew how to dribble the ball. And it was such a simple practice. All you needed to do was put the cones out and then take the soccer ball and dribble it in between the cones. Sounds easy enough. Everybody else in the class could do it. And then when it was my turn, I kicked the ball. I told my leg and my foot to kick it one way, and it went the opposite way, and it hit the wall, and everybody laughed. And when you're 12, that's the time of your life where the world starts to kind of microscope in on you, and you feel like everybody's watching you. And everyone laughed, and the teacher gave me a hard time and said, "Don't worry, bring it back to the line, start over." So I bring it back to the line, kick it again, it goes to the wall. Everyone laughs. Now, at this point, I'm starting to get flush and feeling, even as I tell this story, my hands are sweating and I can feel my heart rate starting to go up. Bring it back to the line, start again, kick it again, and again, it goes to the wall. And now this gets the entire class's attention. And this is when the entire class, including the teacher, who wanted to teach me a lesson of persistence, probably well-intentioned, "Bring it back, Katie, bring it back, do it again. Bring it back to the line, kick it again, goes to the wall." And at this point, I remember the rest of the story from third person, because this was the origin of my disembodiment, because suddenly I'm telling my body to do one thing and it's not listening. And then I have shame, embarrassment, vulnerability times a million with all of my peers mocking and screaming, "Come on, Katie, you suck. Just kick the ball. What's so hard? Can't you do this?" And I freeze and I can't do anything. And my nervous system is shot. And I'm just trying not to black out. And finally, the teacher kind of recognizes there's something wrong here, says, "Just forget it, Katie," and moves on. And this is a story that so many highly sensitive people have as a young person, where something that was so easy and fun when they were little, which was just to be free movement, now becomes a task and work. And not only that, but we get performance anxiety because we have all of the eyes on us. And instead of just feeling in the flow, a lot of highly sensitive people just cannot do it. And so this is just one of my origin stories of becoming disembodied. A second one that I'll gloss over a little bit more is, as a highly sensitive person, which I will define in the next slide, our senses are heightened. We have more active nervous systems. And so although I was raised in a very stable environment in the suburb outside of Chicago, and things were very calm and predictable, and my nervous system was pretty chill for the majority of my upbringing, when I became an adult, I started to move to lots of different bustling cities, and all of my senses heightened. There was obnoxious noises like motorbikes in Barcelona's, or there were strange smells like curry fish balls in Hong Kong, flashing lights. Things were just more stimulating. And as a result, my body felt unsafe. And as a result of feeling unsafe, I also began to disembody anytime I would leave the house, because it was too much for my nervous system. And so it was my journey about 5 years ago when I started to recognize that I had left my body, that I started to come back to my body. And I've done a lot of work, and some of those practices are what I'm going to share with you today. But first, I want to introduce the term high sensitive person, because many of you joined today because you are also a highly sensitive person or an empath. And I won't go too deeply into it because I want to make sure we get into our movement, but somebody that can take you much further into it, shall you have a fun research rabbit hole later, is Dr. Elaine Aaron, who is the premier researcher of high sensitivity. In her original book, The Highly Sensitive Person, Dr. Elaine Aaron identified an acronym, and we all love acronyms because they make it so much easier to remember, the cluster of seemingly disconnected traits that a highly sensitive person has. We, just so you know, we are about 1 in 5 of the world population. 15 to 20% of us are highly sensitive, and it is genetic. So if it's not coming from a parent, chances are it's coming from an aunt or an uncle, or even some cousins might also identify or have traits of a highly sensitive person. We're not all introverts. I myself am an extrovert. 30% of us are extroverts, and 70% of us are introverts. And it's equally distributed amongst the genders. The traits that seem to be quite disparate at first glance, many of us in the audience today will resonate with. And I'd love to know if there's one letter or more that you resonate with more. Feel free to write the letter in the chat box as I go. In acronym DOES, which is from Dr. Elaine Aron, we have D, the deep processors. Highly sensitive people experience the world very deeply and strongly. So we think about things, and not only do we think about things, but our brain lights up in an fMRI scan of thinking of very disparate pieces of information and connects them more so than a non-sensitive person. And so what's interesting about this is we make great problem solvers because we come up with creative solutions. We love to philosophize, think deeply, strongly about things. We are often really quick-witted, cynical, and sarcastic because we understand the connections and the complexities. O stands for we get overstimulated easily. So these are all neutral traits, but depending on the context, can take on a negative or positive connotation. The positive side of overstimulating easily is actually we're really attracted to stimulus. So many highly sensitive people have a very avid curiosity where we want to explore the world or explore our inner worlds in books, movies, or just in ourselves, we're seekers. However, we feel overstimulated quickly because our nervous system is more sensitive than the other 80% of the population. And so we will love a carnival or a festival until we don't. And sometimes it is like hitting a wall and all of a sudden you just become overstimulated. And for the 30% that are extroverts, this can be very confusing for you because you think you enjoy being out in the world with people, but then all of a sudden you just need to leave. So the overstimulation, S, which we'll get to in a moment, but it's because our senses are literally perceiving everything very quickly, strongly, and intensely. So it's easy for us to get overstimulated. And this is one of the first practices that we will focus on today, is how to make sure we balance our nervous system. E in DOES stands for we are emotional and empathic. We have a rich inner world. We're very familiar with our emotions and we are emotionally literate. We can understand that tight knot of emotions. Maybe we're starting a new job. We can pull out each emotion. I'm excited, I'm nervous, I'm grieving my old job, I don't want to mess up. You know, like we can feel every single one and we can identify them. We're also really familiar with understanding the emotions in other people, which is part of being empathic. We're empathic because we can understand the subtlest facial expressions and energetic expressions of people and the emotions that are coming out of them. Sometimes this even goes with places and things where we are really picking up on the energetic signatures of emotions. And this is another practice that we'll work on today, is trying to discern between which emotion is ours, which is that of someone else. And lastly, S for DOES is we are sensitive to subtleties. And what I mean by this is similar to E in that we are empathic and we can pick up on the energy signatures, but we're also picking up on like in the iceberg, we're picking up on like all of the iceberg underneath the water that the other 80% of the people don't understand. And this can be anything from as simple as how the room is decorated. We know where everything in the refrigerator is. And if you have a partner that isn't highly sensitive and they're like, where's the ketchup? You're like, how can you not know it's in front of the milk? You know, we all have stories of how do people not understand where things are. We also really are familiar with, you know, if something changes slightly, we'll notice if the bus driver gets a haircut, you know, or if somebody's in a certain mood or they're saying one thing, but they mean something else. We actually are very sensitive to these subtleties. And we're also sensitive to invisible subtleties like air pressure, EMF frequencies. and things that maybe for many people just doesn't even exist in their reality. So that is why it can be difficult to describe yourself as a highly sensitive person, because these things, they are seemingly disconnected, but they're all a result of having a more active nervous system and feeling the world very deeply and strongly. So I think I'm going to just check the chat and see which ones people are resonating with. Quite a bit. Yeah, okay, quite a bit. We have a lot. So I'm just going to talk mostly about, I mentioned before that these are neutral traits, those are all neutral, but depending on the circumstance, they tend to give us a positive or negative feeling. They can feel like a strength in some situations, and they can feel like a challenge in many others. But both of our strengths and our challenges lead to disembodiment as a result of being a highly sensitive person. So one of the strengths is we're really good deep processors, and so we're quick-witted and we're very intense and focused with our mind. We prefer an entry point into the world through our mind, many of us. And so as a result of that, we become that walking brain that I described when I was writing my dissertation 5 years ago. I didn't even know I had a body other than my fingers because they were typing everything. Another strength that we have is we relate so strongly with our emotions. And it's a beautiful thing to feel so strongly when you're pleasantly emotionally stimulated. It's wonderful. But we often miss where it's living in our bodies. And so we also are connecting with the emotions that are a little bit denser and darker, like worry and frustration, anxiety. And it lives inside of our bodies. And sometimes we're so familiar with the emotion, we actually aren't paying attention to where it lives inside of our bodies. So those are like strengths as a result of being highly sensitive, but they do lead to disembodiment. Also, something that is a challenge for many HSPs is our heightened senses. They tend to make us feel unsafe or threatened. When I lived in Barcelona, every time a motorbike came up from behind me, I would jump every time. I never got used to it. And that is because we startle easily. We don't feel safe. We often feel threatened. And similar to me kicking the soccer ball, I would tell my body what to do and it wouldn't actually do anything. And then I would feel the stares of everyone and I would start to feel unsafe. So when we have these heightened senses, we often find that they're too much. And so we disembody so that we don't have to feel these senses. And lastly, many of us don't trust our body because sadly, a lot of us feel disconnected or we've experienced trauma. So living in our bodies doesn't feel like a place we want to be. And so as a result of these traits of strengths and challenges, many highly sensitive people have become disembodied. So the practice, and if there's one that you resonate with more, feel free to share that in the chat box as well. Maybe it's several of them. And we cannot necessarily take away the past of ourselves, of our experience working or living as a highly sensitive. But what we can do is learn new practices to come home to our body. So there are three that we're going to focus on today. And for the remaining 30 minutes of session, we will be in our bodies. So if you haven't already, go ahead and clear space for yourself because these are the three things that we will be doing today. The first practice, so we want to enhance pleasure. We want to amplify it in our felt senses so that we can calm our nervous system by giving it enough neural pathways of pleasure that it balances out the sensations of feeling threatened. So we want to teach our body that there is such a thing as pleasurable sensations, not just annoying ones. The second practice that we will be doing is we will be feeling our emotions, really feeling our feelings. And we'll create energy signatures for 5 common emotions because we want to understand our own energy signatures compared to someone else's. So that when we are feeling anxiety, we want to know if that anxiety is collective or from another person, or if that is our individual energy signature. And then we'll also allow that emotions to get in motion and exit our bodies so that they don't stay around in that subtle energy and give us symptoms. And then the third practice is we're going to learn healthy boundaries by trusting our bodies, yes and no. So we really are going to discern, as the body never lies, never. What a great asset to have a walking lie detector. It never lies. So we want to make sure that we can discern between our own bodies, yes or no, so that we learn how to create healthier boundaries so that we aren't over arousing ourselves, both burning out and feeling resentful. Many empaths and highly sensitives do that. So I'm just going to check in the chat box if there's one that you're looking forward to more than others for the practice. Okay. I'm not able to see the chat yet, so I'm going to have to unshare my screen in a moment, but let's do it. I will be sharing some music, and if for some reason you really like some of the songs, it's called Embodiment on Spotify under my name, Katie T. Larson. So I'm going to stop sharing my screen now, and I'm going to instead share some music. So what I'd like you to do is go ahead and find a safe ground. You're going to be on your hands and knees first. Okay, so I see that there's a little bit of a lag. All right, thanks for letting me know. And just if anybody can see, is this loud enough? Can you hear the music? It's kind of quiet music. If somebody can do a thumbs up if you can hear it, that'd be fabulous. Okay, thanks. All right, so what we're going to do first is we're going, if for any modifications for the movement, two things that you can do. We are going to do the first felt sensation is going to be moving, felt sensation within your body, but you can do this with sight or sound or smell or taste, any other of your senses. And if you don't want to be on your hands and knees, of course you can stand up, you can do anything you like. The reason we're going to do it on our hands and knees is actually purposeful. So I'll just get on my hands and knees here. And the reason is because when we're sitting, sometimes we over-prioritize our head by allowing it to be the top, the crown chakra, or we over-prioritize our sacral or our root chakra. But what I'd like to do is offer the potential to put all of ours in equal axes so that we're not overthinking this. And that we're not trying too hard to ground, but we're just really getting in our body and giving equal weight to each area of our body. So again, if you can't do hands and knees, please just go ahead and find any position. Or if you can't move, you can go, the name is Katie T. Larson on Spotify. Embodied, embodiment. What I want you to do first is just, you're gonna locate an area in your body that feels good. And if you don't have anything that feels good at this moment, I just want you to feel something that doesn't have pain. Yeah? And when you find that area, today mine is my hips, what I want you to do is you're going to amplify the pleasure of that specific area. And if it might take you a while to find it, maybe it's just something as simple as your little finger or your little toe, but you're just going to start to move your body in a way, and everyone's will look different, where you're amplifying that pleasure to move into the other areas of your body. So maybe it's starting, I'll use my hips as example. Maybe it's in your hips. You're just feeling how pleasurable, how it feels good. You're asking it if it can just move a little bit bigger. Maybe it's just 1 centimeter more. You're just moving your body in a way that feels nicely to you. And as you continue that, I just want to make a comment that many of us will be experiencing pain at the same time as us feeling pleasure. And you can have these at the same time. You may not completely diminish your pain, but you're going to amplify the pleasure of your felt sensations in your body. And I want you to just see if perhaps you can move in a way
that your body's kind of whispering, you know what would feel really good, and then just trust it. And if for some reason you want to lay on your back, or if you want to move by standing up, maybe you want to do something a little bit more vertical, just give yourself an experience where it's a free movement of trust, where you can amplify the pleasure. For those of you who aren't able to move, you're going to look at something in your room, or you're going to, maybe you're drinking coffee, or you're taking some, maybe eating lunch. You're just going to savor your sensation a little bit longer, because what we're doing is we're putting down the pathways, we're trotting into a path to make something feel more pleasurable. It might feel pleasurable and painful at the same time. It's okay if it does. We're trying to amplify the pleasure. I myself have a headache, but I feel really good in my hip now because I've been moving it in a nice way. So we're just gonna do it for a little bit longer, and I'm gonna kind of move with you for a few more minutes. Just allow yourself. Find an area of your body. Then take a few more breaths. What we're going to do next. Just going to pause the music for a moment as I describe it. What we're going to do next is, if you haven't already, we're going to find a comfortable position. And so perhaps that's just as simple as what you've already found yourself in, because you found a really nice pleasurable spot and you want to stay there. Maybe you want to lay down, or maybe you'd like to sit in a chair. But the next thing we're going to do is we're actually now going to go into the second activity already. And we're going to feel different energy sensations in order to capture an energy signature. And I'll describe that more in a moment. But I want to make sure that everybody finds a nice space where they can now take that pleasurable feeling that has been amplified. And they're going to sit down. And in a moment, I'm going to take off my camera because I'm going to lead you towards a guided meditation. And I will describe to you first of why we're doing this. For many of us, highly sensitives, we feel so strongly that sometimes we identify too intensely with our emotions, and we can be afraid of them. And so we either try to get rid of them too quickly, or we just unconsciously allow them to live on our body. And honestly, I have a toddler, and I think feelings are like toddlers because they really want your attention. And if you don't give it to them, they're going to act out. And they're either going to act out by giving you symptoms in your physical body, or they're going to act out by making it so obvious that this is the feeling that you have, that you're not paying attention to me, that sometimes we burst out or we have really strong reactions. So we're going to learn how to create energy signatures so that we know which feeling is which, but then also we can determine when we're picking up on other people's feelings, if those are ours or if those are theirs. So I'm going to turn off my camera for a moment. Here we go. And if you're not already in a comfortable space, find one. Originally, you're going to feel these feelings live in your body. You're going to notice what they are right away. And we will feel them. It's almost like bringing them a cup of tea and letting them share a cup of tea with you. But then you're going to gently say, okay, thank you, goodbye. We're not going to let them stay. And if for any unwelcome guests that just happened to stay, the end of this second practice is going to be how to get our emotions in motion and get them out of our bodies if they get stuck. So the first thing that I'd like you to do is we're going to embody five feelings, and you're going to notice where they live within your body. And for those of us that are dual learners, so maybe you are claircognizant, or you're clairsentient, or you're clairvoyant, whatever your specialty is, if you would like to see your emotion, give it a shape, give it a color. Maybe you would like to give it a character avatar or something, but allow yourself to give this almost a robust signature so that it is in, there is no question about it when this comes up again. And the first one we're going to embody is worry. Worry. So just allow in your body the sensation of worry. Notice where it lives. Is it on the top or the bottom of your body? Is it warm, cold? Does it seem to have a shape? Mine is a dull aching in my knees, in my shoulders. So just notice the sensation of worry. Perhaps you want to give it a name or an avatar or a shape or color or even a smell to associate it with worry. And then I'd like you to gently allow worry, after it's had a nice cup of tea with you, to leave your body. And take a deep breath. And I want you to enter to anxiety. Why is she making us feel anxiety? Some of you may ask. This has been a very anxious year for us in 2020. So I want you to embody, where do you notice it? Instantly, my gut feels tense. My mouth is dry. Notice, is it in the top or the bottom? Which organs, which parts of your body is it more noticeable in? Does it have a shape or a color? Want to give it a name or an avatar, smell. There's been a lot of anxiety in the world. So what does your anxiety look like? Because this will be important when you notice somebody else's anxiety or a collective anxiety, whether or not you need to pay attention to that, because it might not be yours. Just give this anxiety a signature. And then I take a deep breath and say, goodbye, anxiety. Just let it leave your body. And notice if you notice the sensation as it leaves your body. And you take a deep breath. And we'll go to worry. Oh, I'm sorry, we already said worry, didn't we? I'm sorry, sadness. We'll go to sadness. Sorry, we're doing all of the hard emotions first. Go to sadness. And I feel that instantly in my heart. Is it in the top of your body, the bottom? Is it cool or warm? Is there a color? A shape? Does it connect things? Do you feel hollow? Do you feel full? Does it associate something particular with your version of sadness? And you're just going to take a breath. Know that you're safe. Tell your nervous system that you are safe. You're going to ask sadness to leave. Now we'll go up into the more higher frequencies. We'll start with anticipation. And I want you to compare anticipation with anxiety, because sometimes we get these confused, and anticipation has a more positive connotation, doesn't it? I was very in anticipation today for this conference. So where does this live? I feel mine in my throat. What does it feel like? What are the sensations of anticipation? Where does it live in your bones, in your guts, in your muscles? What's the shape? Heart, your sweaty palms. Just allow anticipation for a moment. And then we're going to take a deep breath and just allow anticipation to leave us. Remember, any house guests that stick around, they're going to be booted out in the next part of the activity where we'll be shaking. Don't worry if you have anxiety or sadness hanging over you at the moment. The last emotion we're going to invite in for tea is joy. Just allow joy. What does that sensation feel like? Allow joy to overtake your body. Where does it live? The top, the bottom? What shape is it? Sometimes I even taste something. Allow joy. I'll give you a little extra longer with joy. As much as I can't believe I'm going to say the phrase, let joy leave you. We're going to let joy temporarily leave us. Oops. But before we get up and move, I just want one more time. I just want to see if you can quickly recall your energy signatures. The first was worry. Just feel it quickly in your body. Can you quickly recall it? Does it have an association strong enough that you can recall it? Recognizing. Now anxiety. Now sadness. Anticipation. And joy. What we're going to do next is, as some of you are saying in the chat box, these things don't leave us sometimes. And that is where they get stuck in our bodies. And you might notice instantly, oh my gosh, I have worry in my neck, and every time I worry, I get a neck ache and a headache. And maybe you've known this your whole life, but maybe you're just making the connection now. So how do we get this out of our bodies when we know that emotions are supposed to go in motion through us and not always stick? And the answer is we have to get in motion, literally. So when you're not at this exact moment and you're in your regular life, this can be running, dancing, any of the free movement work, stretching, anything you need to do. But what we're going to do in this exact moment, because it's somewhat easier than anything else, is we're going to shake. So I'm going to stand up first, and we are going to literally shake it out. And for those of you that have a family member watching you right now, they're going to love watching this part. So go ahead, and we're going to start to shake first. Get it out of your arms. Your other arm. Just let your body take out the emotions. I'm gonna go to my legs now. You're gonna look silly, but you're gonna notice instantly. Maybe you wanna actually let it off, like floss that off, emotions. The This is only a 2-minute song, so imagine if you did this for 2 minutes when you feel really heavy. Maybe you want to wag your tail like a puppy dog, or do a silly dance. Shake. Some of us, this is the biggest exercise we've gotten all day. I just want to share, out of breath, obviously. I have been struggling with migraines in 2020 because so many of us were holding on to the worry and the anxiety of ourselves, but the collective in our bodies. And this was a 2-minute thing where we're just allowing the emotion to physically leave our bodies and to return down to the earth, because those emotions are so dense, many of them. We always want joy to stick around, but sadness, anxiety, and grief, those are heavy. So when we literally shake them out, the longer the better, maybe we can actually go running or bouncing or anything. You're allowing them to return to the earth, which needs dense energy. Gotta catch my breath. All right. We're gonna move on to the third practice, which again, you can find any position you like for this one. And for those of us, thank you so much. Some of us are experiencing this emotion. I should just allow us. I'm such a timekeeper here, I don't want to run over time, but I want to allow that transition for those of us that have allowed a lot of 2020's emotions off of us. Just take a moment to honor that. And just allow that out of you. So again, the reason we practice that specific one is those energy signatures are our own. They're the barcode of our emotions. And when you are now, as a highly sensitive person or an empath, in a situation where you are feeling an emotion, when I used to eat lunch in Hong Kong, I would always pick up on insecurity and that it was not enough. And then I felt like I needed to do more and be more. And I'd say, I don't feel like this. What? Whose is this? It wasn't mine. It was the collective. It was everybody at lunchtime rushing past me, and I would pick up on their energy. But knowing my own energy signature of insecurity was the thing that got me to recognize that's theirs. That's not my insecurity. So I can't recommend enough to create an energy signature dictionary in your body and in your felt sensations to know which emotions are yours. Which are not. Be okay with not taking on those that are not. And this third activity is one that will help you with that as well. What we're going to do next is more of a still activity, but it is still embodiment practice of understanding how to tap into our bodies, yes and no. Because the best part about our body is that it never lies. And you know it doesn't lie when you say yes to something, but you really mean no, and suddenly you feel dread and resentment. And that right there will show us the difference that we weren't listening to our yes and no intuition and knowing of our felt body somatic wisdom. So the way we're going to do this is 2 to 3-fold, depending on the time. First thing I'd like you to do is I want you to tell your body your name, okay? So we all love our own name. So we're just gonna tell ourselves, my name is, and you're gonna feel the way that your body feels when you say your name. So my name is Katie. Just feel, say your own name. Feel that sensation. Now this is going to become your yes. Now we're gonna just come up with a random word
a random name that isn't yours. So you can use my name if you want, or Joe or John or whatever, but you're going to give yourself, I am John. And you're going to feel in your body the difference. And you have enough time now to do your name and the fake name. First, we'll do the fake name. Mine literally feels like this, like a blockage. Say, my name is, and then my name is your real name. Just notice the difference. And we're just going to ask it now in the more abstract. Ask your body, what is my yes feel like? See if it's similar to your name. What does my yes feel like? Mine is like light, kind of like bubbly, it's like floaty. Okay. What does my no feel like? Ask your body, what does my no feel like? Okay, a brick wall. Okay. Some of us have done this experience before. So now we're just going to take it to the next level for those of us that know our yes and no, and for those of us that are still learning our yes and no and really want to practice it now. I want you to start with the most mundane, banal question that you can think of to ask your body. Like, should I eat the leftover salmon in the fridge for dinner tonight? Like, something really boring, but trust its answer. Mine said no. Don't eat the leftover fish. Throw it away. Okay? So, ask your body some banal questions first. Notice if you feel a difference. And I'm noticing in the chat box, some of us don't feel a difference. And this is a muscle. Not only is it a muscle, but each time we do it, it's like putting money in the bank. We're making deposits into the bank of trusting our body. So the first couple times, if you don't do this often, it's gonna feel like a penny going into your bank and making a big clunk. And it doesn't feel like much to you yet, but it's a practice. This is a practice. So we're going to now ask a little bit more of an important question to your body. Notice how you feel about the answer. So maybe you've been wondering if you want to move, or if you should quit your job, or if you should leave a partner. Like, this might be a very serious, deep, difficult question. What I'd like you to do now is feel your body's yes or no answer first, and then I'll also give some tips on what that might feel like for some of us, but I want you to trust your own body first. A serious sometimes our body will say no, but it'll give us an energy signature that's either very strong no, or it's a no of, I say no, you can try it, but you'll see for yourself. And I sometimes have said, well, I'm not going to listen to my body, and I'm just going to do it anyway, because it's given me like this permissive, you can see. And for example, like climb a boulder. The other day, I'm like, should I climb that boulder? My body's like, nah, don't do it. Don't do it. And I was like, wow, I think I should do it. I mean, come on, I should just try it. Maybe I'll like be surprised myself. And I climbed it, and it was the worst experience. I fell, I scraped up my fingers, I scraped up my knees. And I could just feel my body laughing at me of like, I told you, like, what made you want to do this? Well, why did you think that was a good idea? And so sometimes we feel we want to challenge our bodies, and that's okay, but really banking enough experiences of when we listened to our bodies and it went well,
versus when we've listened to our bodies and it doesn't go well, allows us to really begin to trust it more and more and more, because you're pulling from that bank of trust. And what I'd like to do now is,
we've only got a couple of minutes left. So I'm not sure if you want to take a question or...
Questions. That's what I was just going to say. I'm just going to take any questions, and Nicola is going to read them to me in order.
So we'll just have to keep the answers quite spot on so we can get through them. And if not, you know, if your question doesn't get answered, I'm sure if you contact Katie, she will address them if that's it's the point. So the first one is overthinking an attribute of a highly sensitive person?
Yes. Okay, good. Now I see the question box. Yes, overthinking is an attribute of a highly sensitive person, and that is as a result of our D, which is the depth of processing. We are the best problem solvers in the whole world because we can figure out every single situation and what we should do in every single situation. But just like a toy that is really fun to play with, some of us can't put that toy down. And overthinking is a result of having very good problem solving skills. We create problems that we have to solve all the time. So yes, overthinking is.
Amazing answer, thank you. How to differentiate between our own emotions and outside emotions or emotions from the collective? I find it hard. This is from Prilly.
It's very difficult. And I think for many of us, especially in these very potent times, I don't watch the news, I don't read the news, but I'm still picking up on the collective anxiety. And so I find the energy signatures to be the number one helpful tool for me of what is your brand of anxiety? What is your brand of joy? What is your brand of worry? Because when you know your brand, your barcode, if we'd like to say it that, you can be more helpful to dismiss and discern those that are not yours. Creating a protective energy bubble, whether it's through visual or through mantra, or just allowing, saying, is this mine? And trusting your body's yes or no answer, that alone can alleviate many of these problems.
Thank you. And probably our last question that we're going to be able to cover today. And sorry, that's my dog. He's back. It is always best to start early. How do we go about this for our little ones? How do I know I'm not imposing, projecting to the kids? Charles needs.
Thank you so much for adding. How do I know I'm not projecting this? Because two things. Number one, it's really hard to label kids so early, but I will recommend a book called The Highly Sensitive Child from Dr. Elaine Aaron, who also has so many great ones, also called The Highly Sensitive Parent, The Highly Sensitive Man, like everything, right? So number one, there are going to be really telltale signs if your child has this. And often it's going to be the sensations, right? The sensations are heightened. My daughter will walk into her room, what's that smell? She'll know it immediately. Her emotions are heightened when she watches a television show. She'll cry if the character's puppy gets lost. So I'm pretty confident that she is a highly sensitive child, but it's also important not to label them too quickly and just allow them to develop as they are. But what they need more than what we didn't have as highly sensitive adults, so we're just figuring it out as an adult, is the tools. So allowing them tools. Your child will get overstimulated more likely than other children. So allowing them really space a neutral timeout. So just maybe like, you know, break, say time for a break, so that they can have rest and recovery time, will really prevent tantrums, acting out, frustrating emotions. So allowing them the tools that they need. My daughter's only 2.5 and already knows the word overstimulated, because when she announces it to me, I can take her out of a situation and she doesn't feel shame for being overstimulated. So these are things that we can give as parents to our children, because remember, it's genetic, and they will go really far in their upbringing. And I'll just say I'm writing a book about this right now called The Sensitive Journey, which is about adults who figure out they're highly sensitive as an adult. And what is that like? And so this is something that many of us figure out late in life. And it's quite the journey as we explore that.
Oh, beautiful. Thank you so much. Katie, that was an amazing session. And I know so many have taken so much out of it just from the engagement in the chat. It's always a good indication. So thank you so much. And we'll come back to you for the final word. But for those who are on the call today, thank you for joining us. To let you know, you'll be able to watch this free for the next 48 hours, which is like all the presentations that are going on during the conference. But what we're really encouraging everyone to do is buy them for the rest of your life, because these practices are practices and we have to keep practicing. And it's easy to think, oh, I've done this once and I get it. And I know my shape for joy was star, but I can tell you in a couple of weeks, you won't remember that, but you will remember it if you have Katie in your back pocket as a reference. And when you upgrade the package, it gives you some really great functionality around. You can just listen to the audios and not have to watch the videos. So like you listen to a podcast. It also gives you learning lists. So depending on where you're starting in your embodiment journey, you know, we can tell you who the good speakers are when you're beginner, intermediate and advanced. So you can really build on your learning over that journey. Not only is it a great gift to you, but it's a great gift to us and the supporters and the creators of the conference. So if you are in a place to do that, by purchasing the upgrade, you allow everyone else to also access it for free. So it's been an absolute honor today, Katie. And I loved it. My shape was a star for joy, and I really resonated with finding the shapes in my expansion in my emotions. So what is your number one hot embodiment tip or tip for staying embodied as much as possible?
I am one of the 20% of highly sensitive people in the world, and I believe it is a superpower. And that the fact that we can feel our senses so intensely means we need to make sure that we're giving as much pleasure to our senses as possible. Many of us find out we're highly sensitive as a result of the challenges of being highly sensitive, but it's important to balance out the challenges by using our superpowers and making those moments of our lives pleasurable, so that we actually have a fuel of pleasure in our lives that's going to keep us going when we feel burnt out and over aroused and overstimulated. So allow yourself pleasure, find it in every way you can, take time to do that, and share these tips with other highly sensitive people.
Amazing. Thank you. Talking to the converted here. Big pleasure activist. So yeah, that was absolutely amazing. So if you want to continue this chat, you're most welcome to join the coffee break rooms that are available for you to connect with all the people in the conference at the moment. There should be a link in the chat. And also you can follow the coaching and therapy stream on Facebook, as well as the full conference stream. So thank you everyone for joining us on this session. I wish you all the best. Please find Katie at her website there, growthquest.com. And I'm sure if your question didn't get answered, she'd be happy.
Yeah, please send me an email. Happy to answer them.
Amazing. So wishing everyone a wonderful conference as we continue. I'm not even sure what day we're up to now, but it's,
yeah. I'll see everyone in the participant zone for the rest of the conference.
That's it. Amazing. Thanks so much.
Thank you.